dear. I'm a friend, we are preparing for our last Dhamma talk. And as a concept, may you all give three times sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Namo tasse bhagavito arahato sammā sambuddhasse. Namo tasse bhagavito arahato sammā sambuddhasse. Namo tasse bhagavito arahato sammā sambuddhasse. Vedanā cāhaṁ bhikkave kiṁ nidānā, kiṁ samudayā, kiṁ jātikā, kiṁ bhabhavāti iti. Dear Dhamma friends, in this Unnatanna Sankhya Sutta, the Buddha gave the opportunity of this misunderstanding or wrong view of that particular monk, and basically after correcting that as to that consciousness is not the eternal, it is not permanent, it is arising out of its causes. Whenever the due causes, relevant causes are ceases to exist, this particular vijnana also ceases to exist. With that opportunity, the Buddha expands this up to all the five aggregates, and then in order to get rid of doubts, in order to get rid of bewilderment, he says, any of these five aggregates, if someone is someone managed to see its arising, he or she will understand each and everyone has its own relevant due course. And to understand the course, one has to trace back to the source and come back to the original place, then only one can see. It's someone managed to see the rising part, he or she not only see the relevant cause, but equally can see as and when the relevant cause ceases to exist, that particular aggregate itself is, ceases to exist. And then the Buddha is asking, if someone is not having that kind of a systematic approach, is there any chance for someone to entertain doubts, to be bewildered about these five aggregates? Then the monks are telling exactly that is the case. So if someone is, after instruction and being prepared, managed to see the arising right from the beginning, as and when it arises, someone can manage to see five aggregates and manage to see relevant due course, and to see rising and passing of these due causes, condition, rising and passing of the aggregates, can there be any chance for entertaining doubts? Then monks are telling, answering, there is no chance because someone see from the beginning. So then the Buddha says that if someone is going, whatever may be the aggregate, go to the base and see its relevant cause or nutrients, he or she will see, even though aggregates are different in names, their relevant causes are common. Their relevant causes are the same, that is to say, four nutrients. And then the Buddha indicates four nutrients, and the four nutrients has their own dependent origination, or then when they are rising and ceases to exist. And bringing the subject to these four aggregates, then the Buddha is asking, why if someone needs to say the single cause, or what is the primary cause for this five nutriments, he says the desire is the single cause. And due to the desire only, physical food, contact, mental formations, and consciousness arises. And if someone managed to see each and everything is based upon one's own desire, not the past desire, not the future desire, not the new desire in other places, not the desire of the other person, then and there arising desire. So if someone can manage to see that then and there arising desire, you look at it from the healthy point of view, you can see there is no second person causing this trouble. You are the very person, it is happening here and now. And someone, if someone misunderstand, he or she will not take this, fail to see that my own desire is the one creating this, all the kind of nutriment and all the kinds of friction, all the kind of suffering. So if that is the case, they have that means that doubt they will attribute to it another person, omnipresent, omnipotent God, or to the neighbor, or to the government, or to the climate, or to the past, whatever may be. So therefore they are, if someone managing means someone is ready to accept all this array of suffering is due to here and now desire. And then the Buddha asking, is there any cause, is there any source, origin, or birth, or production of this feeling, desire? Then the Buddha says, if someone is asked like that, answer is yes. Answer is that all the desire because of our feeling, that is to say, to maximize the pleasurable feeling, which is a common character for all the living beings, not only limited to the human beings, and everyone is chasing behind the desire towards the pleasure. So understanding that, and on top of that, if someone is having under the nose experience, whatever the ways and means you are implementing to get that pleasurable feeling, overall what is end up with the suffering. So therefore it is desperating, disappointing, suffering is happening, even though whatever the ways and means you are using to gain the pleasure. So therefore, with that idea, if someone is ready to understand or take time to understand one's own feeling, it's a big subject or which detail, enough detail we find in the canonical teaching. Yesterday, we took this feeling as the day's subject, day's topic, and tried our best to understand there are two types of feeling, which is easy to, in a sense, easy to understand, that is pleasure gained through your senses or sensuous pleasure, and that is we call materialistic pleasure. And therefore we can say this materialistic pleasure is the one creating desire. It is the one nourishing all the five aggregates, therefore it is perpetuating. As far as the five aggregates are there, the suffering is there, the friction is there, tension is there, frustration is there. So therefore, one has to understand what is the appropriate way and the balance, the harmony as far as the materialistic pleasure is concerned. So this, even the Western psychology, the founder, Sigmund Freud, attributed, he recognized this as a sexual pleasure. The Buddha attributed that to a sensual pleasure. But otherwise, the attributions are the same. But later Sigmund Freud developed it further into, and the Buddha also, in the sense that the materialistic pleasure is here and now, through your senses, directly you feel it, and when and where you are trying to achieve it, maximize it through sensuous gratification, more and more you are leading to tension, more and more leading to the friction and frustration. So therefore, religious fields come out and say, not only this here and now suffering, here and now materialistic gain, there's another kind that is devoid of, free from all the materialistic impingements, objects, and still one can have a spiritual, immaterial kind of pleasure that is you can gain through this samatha bhavana, concentration, and whereby not only you do away with physical, materialistic, pleasurable thing, you try to keep their perception also from the mind. When and where you manage to keep away all the materialistic thing together with its own perception, then we can say you achieve the concentration. If I am to little expand this point, when we come here, a place like this, we are far away from our dear and near ones. We are far away from our properties. We are far away from our already earned fame, gain and everything. We did it with full effort. We find how difficult to gain this kind of an opportunity. But even then, when you come and sit on the cushion, what happens in the mind? Their perception, the thinking about your dear and near ones, thinking about the other places, other people, obsess your mind more than ever. This is the danger of the perception. You can get rid of the material. You can get rid of your dear and near one. You can get rid of your earnings and forget about other kind of things. But when you come and close your eyes, they start frothing. They start keep on proliferating. And there you must know, you will understand how much effort systematically you have to exert in order to get the mind free of these perception of the materialistic gain, materialistic pleasure. But you have already earned. More you earn, more difficult you find to find the peace of mind. Or in the sense, it's in the more correct way, more you attach to your materialistic thing, even physically you are devoid of them, you get the distance, how much it is chasing behind you and attacking you, that is the way Buddha says, not only the rupa, but the rupa sanya, how to get rid of the perception regarding these matters. So they creep into your stream of consciousness and hacking, disturbing and bewildering you, never allow to keep the peace of mind. So we'll say with the whole the effort, when someone is managing maybe few thought moments, few seconds or few minutes to understand, they are, he or she has to understand, this concentration happen whenever there is no materiality. If there are any material or material perception, no concentration. The mindfulness is the matter, the mental factor going to tell you getting rid of materiality is also something praiseworthy, but that won't close the chapter. You have to understand the perception, how much coming and disturbing you. So you have to use samatha techniques, a lot of meditation techniques to do away with five hindrances, and they are one day you will see it is a possibility even for a split second, and it was a possibility even before the arising of the Buddha. There was a technique even in India to keep away from this obsessional defilement, or pancha nivarana, or hindrances. When and where you go, there you find, as far as materiality is, there are no concentration. As far as concentration is, there are no materiality or material perception. Both cannot live. So, one, so you keep on refining. One time you can understand, you can keep to a certain extent away from the present here and now moment. For example, it says, if there is a water body and lot of algae and water plants floating on the water, so from a distance it appears like a grassland. If you so much thick layer of the growth on the floating on the water, there's algae and the water plants are floating. So unknown person go there, may see it is from a distance as a grassland. But if you know under that you have good water. So if you wish to have a good water, what you have to do is chase away what is floating away, floating matters, plants, living things, and then scoop your water. Soon you go there, again the layer will be come back and cover it like a grass, like a greenery. So this is how the Nivaranas. You can't get rid of them, but you can see by making a hole and see underneath there's a pure water. The water is very clear, but from the distance it don't appear like water, it appears like a grassland. But if you know, you can chase it away and then get to good water. Therefore, then onward when you are going there, you don't entertain doubts as to whether there is water there, because you have once tapped it, scooped it. So that is how the Buddha says, Nivaranas are something, so much we have accumulated them throughout the past and in this life also. And therefore, it is with full fertilizer, full nutriments and full backing, so it is ever growing. But even then, they are not making a permanent layer, it is just floating. You can chase them away temporarily, and if you wish, get a pot full of pure water. Something like you may come into this concentration once in a way, and first introduction is the breakthrough. And then onward you see, it is not something divine away from this earth, it is not depending on someone else. You have to understand it is a mental state. When and where the mental faculties are aligned with, you are in a concentration. When they are bewildered, when they are fighting each other, no concentration. So, it is like a maker iron into a magnet. Iron means a lot of inside the piece of iron, ions are not in order. It is dispersed. By applying a strong iron magnet in a systematic way, you can align these all the tiny ions, ultimately that become a magnet. So this is what we do. And imagine if you are going to drop that iron, right, drop that developing magnet, again the ions will be completely scattered off and your magnetic power reduces, it becomes just a piece of an iron. Exactly what happened tomorrow to you all. Then you go home again, drop it, and then again mess. And imagine if you are put into a fireplace, again the magnetic power disappears, again everything becomes scattered. That is what the sensuous pleasure. Whenever you are nearing to the sensuous pleasure, that your whole effort to make it an iron score, but its potential remains. Again, you can do it again. Even if it is becoming a mere iron, you can. If you apply again and again, more than the last time, this time your possibility for success is bigger, because once you have experienced it. So now you do it with confidence. So therefore it appear like something, making it and breaking it like. But ultimately you will learn the art. Understanding the magnetizing power of the iron is one thing. Once magnetize it, maintaining this magnetic power is separate thing. The first understanding may be on the teacher's responsibility, on the responsibility of the technique, the responsibility of the meditation center, everything, a little share to the yogi. Maybe yogi also have 50%. But once understood, the maintenance is 100% on the yogi. So that is the way you have to use to compensate. And definitely you will do 1001 mistakes. No one can maintain it from the first time onward. After so much of mistakes, trial and error, you will come to understand that is why it is called Dhamma is profound. Okay, when that you come up to that kind of understanding, mind can defile and again you can refine, and whereby you can get the concentration. Whenever it is defiled, it is too much of hindrances or sensuous pleasure. So both of them are in the same mind, and therefore it's a matter of redoing again and again, just like you are learning how to play a piano, how to play a musical instrument. Then you can't learn by one overnight. You have to do it again and again. So when that come up to that level, we will see our mind try to understand materialistic pleasure and immaterial pleasure. So it's a kind of an upliftment. It's a kind of culturing of the mind. It's a kind of realizing your endowments. When that happens, we can say that is the point where the Buddha started, Buddha to be started his noble quest. Then what is the contribution of the Buddha to the human mind, to the evolution of the human mind? He introduced not the Amisha Sukha, not the Niramisha Sukha, but instead he introduced Avedaita Sukha. Amisha Sukha means materialistic pleasure. Niramisha Sukha means immaterial pleasure. And then the Buddha, in the gradual process, he wanted to introduce further Avedaita Sukha, that is tangible, unperceivable kind of a pleasure. So this wording itself is contradictory. If it is unperceivable, if it is unfeelable, how can it be a pleasure? How can you call it as a pleasure? So, one day when Sariputta was explaining, you all know materialistic pleasure, you renounced. Even after renunciation, you know how much it is difficult to get rid of these hindrances. And whenever you come up to that point where you are familiarized with the mind without hindrances, when you are maintaining it, you see that is what we call immaterial pleasure, Niramisa Sukha. It is religious, it is partly spiritual, but the Buddha, on top of that, on the same line, he is teaching you, restraining you to go to the Avedaita Sukha, and then one month Kaspanta, if it is Avedaita, that is unperceivable, and if you can't experience it, if you can't feel it, how can you use it as a pleasure? In Venerable Sariputta said, mentioned, whatever you feel is nothing but suffering. So in order to facilitate, the Buddha says, each and every pleasure in the conventional convene is nothing but suffering. Because each and every pleasure disappears, leaving suffering behind. No one knows. Everyone is only looking at the face value. Face value, it is good. It is something lovable. It is very good. But when it is disappearing, it is ceasing, ultimately you fail to understand. It is ending up with the suffering. Therefore, according to the vocabulary of the Buddha, vocabulary of the enlightened people, each pleasure is nothing but a suffering. And each and everyone telling the pain or suffering is a dart, prick in your flesh. It is said that there is no argumentation. And therefore, when and where are someone to understand no pain, no pleasure, that is also transient, it is not permanent, but it is given an answer to the pain and the pleasure in the conventional sense, or the pain and the dart, one can come to the no pain, no pleasure. But that is a halfway stage, it is like a end of the diving board at the swimming pool. From there you have to jump. You are going up to that point to before jumping, something like. And then how this Avedaita Sukha can be explained before going to the next step in this particular sutta. So, I would like to suggest another sutta in the same Majjhima Nikaya, Ananda Sappaya Sutta. There the Buddha is explaining in terms of perception. Same thing you can explain in terms of feelings also. He says, material pleasure and materialistic gain, and that is to call physical gain, is also a pleasurable thing. That is what we call that. What we are going to earn as a rich person is the physical matter. And it is leading to kind of a pleasure. But ultimately when it is disappearing and it is rotting and it is beyond control, is going to be the pain. Therefore, whenever someone wishes to feel immaterial pleasure, he has to get rid of this, at least on the experimental basis, your near and near ones and the earnings and all the kind of thing. And then only he or she will understand, even though you got rid of the material as such, their perception is coming and hacking you, torturing you, burning you. And then you have to learn samatha techniques in order to get rid of this perception, rupa sanya. And whenever, it's a hard task. And whenever you come up to the point where rupa sanya is gone, then you will come to a space that is to call the antimatter, or in the sense you can say space. In this space only all the rupa, all the matter is plain. For example, in this area, there are a lot of floating balloons in a party. We can see balloons. But after a few days, all the balloons will collapse and then only we can see the space. As far as the balloons are there, our attraction is to the balloon, but balloons are floating in a space. So, that space becomes your object of meditation. When and where you got rid of not only the matter, but the perception of the matter, not only the rupa, but the rupa sanya, then you come to the face-to-face with akasa. Akasa means void or space. That in the scientific point of view, this is each and every matter has antimatter. So that is how the balance happens. Once you remove the matter, still there is a kind of energy, and that is, you can prove it, you can perceive it, but without that you can't explain the balance of the universe or the physics or the quantum energies, quantum fields. So you have to define antimatter, something like a space. So Buddha, he do not have that kind of a CERN, that is a big laboratory. It is it's a periphery of 26 miles in the Europe. They are built under the ground, 100 meters down there, to experiment it. To see this nucleus powers, how it working, it is not energy. It is not a matter, but kind of a representation. They call dark matter, or sometimes some other way they call antimatter. So Buddha mentioned, when and where you got rid of the rupa, rupa sanya, you end up in the akasa. So you come to a space in the meditation, no more anapanasati, or no more in-breath and out-breath, no more rising and falling. But you know, your mindfulness is intact, your concentration is intact. No sign, no object, but still you feel something as to space, or solitude, or freedom from friction. So when you come there, for the first time you feel like you come to nothingness, like. Because relative to the materiality, this is of course nothing, but there is a space. Space is very difficult to define, difficult to depict something, difficult to reflect upon. It is not that on reflection as such. So therefore, one has to familiarize long time, starting with the gross matter, and then the perception of the matter, rupa and rupa sanya, get rid of them, and then season the experience with the akasa. So that is explained as akasaranchayatana, as a immaterial jhanic state. So when you go there, you feel like space, you are in a complete no friction, and then if you are to question it, or not to appreciate it, try to do something, again you can come back to the gross matter. So therefore, when and where you season it, you see the perception, the consciousness, understand matter and antimatter. So for you first got rid of the matter, and then you come to the antimatter, and when you are more and more familiarizing, you see the consciousness is behind. When and where matter appears to the scene, it understands this is as a sound, or this is a pain, this is a blah, 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 understand. Whenever it is gone, it says there is something. Space. Some kind of a cavity. And ultimately, when and where you see some akasaranchayatana, you are bound to see the function of the vijnana, function of the consciousness. That is to say, even when you are fully experiencing the space, you feel you are not dead. You can really experience you are not dead. And for, if you are lucky enough, you can verify you are not sleeping. And it is not unconscious. So therefore, some characteristics, even if you season this freedom for maybe hours, you see when you go to the, when you precipitate and crystallize and become clear and clear, ultimately, as a kind of a consciousness to see matter and antimatter discretion. So then, for the first time, you understand the, even in Sutta it says, Chitta Padisangvedi Asasisamiti Sikkati, Chitta Padisangvedi Pasasisamiti Sikkati, you find to see the pure mind. Pure mind means when and where the thought appears, when and where sound appears, when and where pain appears, it recognizes. When and where disappears, it recognizes lack of it. There's no sounds, no thought. And this discrimination happened, this is the matter of the consciousness. Consciousness is always see the duality, discriminate, plus and minus, white and black, good and bad. So now when you have any, you can't come to understand, even the here and there thoughts are there, here and there sounds are there, here and there pains are there. The mind withdraw back to the, its own consciousness. And it is appear more and more solitude, more and more freedom, more and more peace, more and more contented. So when that happens, the practice must continue. Ultimately, you come to a place, even that very subtle feeling is not there. You can't perceive it. No feeling. There's a complete blank happens. You come to know you are in a blank, soon you get up. Whenever the gross feeling happens, you come to know, you get a shock and get up and see. Just before that jerk, no memory, no feeling, no perception. So when that happens, you see this is the least friction or most refined middle part, and the other space, the other solitude, the other contentment is so precise, so refined. That is what maximum we can explain, we can experience in this world, whereby the perception is slowly disappearing to the almost like zero. Feelings are also disappearing like almost like zero. And you come to know, while it is there, you can't understand it. While it is there, there is nothing to know, no yardstick to understand, no feeling, no perception. Soon it again, when and where you are going to get kind of a perception and feeling, you get up, you shake and you jerk. And then you come to know, before that, it was a blank. So that indicates, while you are living, in this very life, you can reduce up to the highest solitude, highest freedom, highest peace, as contentment. But unlucky enough, when it is there, you are not experiencing it. The experiencer is not there. Experiencer comes when and where a jerk happens, when and where something cross. And when and where that happens, the Buddha says, what happens is you grab hold of what is crossing the screen. You grab hold what is jerking thing, either you disagree with it or you complain it or you will be happy. But instead the Buddha says in Ananja Sapai Sutta, you must be prepared up to that point, so much so, when the freedom disappears and again you come out with a tiny peck or particle or kind of a jerk, you must recite, Etan santan etan panitan yadidam upekha. Now I am a little jerked, now I am a little shaken, but it is peaceful, it is refined, which was no feeling, no perception. So therefore, don't entertain doubts, or sorry, don't regret yourself, or don't find fault with yourself. Instead, try to come back to the point where no feeling, no perception, and that is the point. You can understand Vedita Sukha. There's a kind of a gap. No feeling, no perception. So, is it a training? Or is it a coincidence? Or is it predictable? Or is it unpredictable? You see, these all are nonsense when you are practicing up to that point. When and where the courses are complete, you can go there. Whenever a jerk happens, you come out there. And that means even that avidya sukha is happening with the cause and effect. So you can, only the maximum you can do is giving the conducive conditions to reduce to the maximum. But as far as the rational mind is there, as far as desire is there, as far as measurement is there, as far as doubt is there, as far as you try to feel it, the only thing you can do is you can disturb it. You can violate it. So not to violate, so much of practice you have to do. So therefore, as far as the feelings are concerned, you can go into such a depth. So when you go there, you understand it's a kind of a rehearsing of the death. There is no other thing you can experience. Or otherwise, you can see experience from the deep sleep. It is like a awakening into a deep sleep. So it is not grammatical. It is not something we can comprehend. But the Buddha says, you can't prove it to second person, but you can experience it. Oh, Pandita Sayadaw try to give an example. He says, when there is a billionaire, he is in his mansion. He is full of all the luxuries. All the beautiful things in his house, in his mansion. All the good music and everything in his mansion. And all the smells or scents and everything, expensive things are there. And there's the best cook or steward also there is ready to prepare all the kind of foods. And luxury is like the beddings and everything full of. But only thing is, man is in the tension. He is insomnia. He can't sleep. Under such circumstances, one day when he is falling asleep on his bed, and while he is on a good nap, the cook prepare a good cake, and it comes a good balance, good taste, good smell, and he come and wake up the fellow, telling, sir, I prepared a cake, it was very nice, very smelling, and why don't you get up and eat? He is asking, will that particular person get a promotion or sack the fellow? Telling that, really only I had the sleep and you come and going to sell this cake. And then Pandita Sayadaw says, if you are going to sack the fellow, he will ask, the cook will ask, sir, what is that? I am going to give you the value of the cake. It's a very nicely cooked and baked and everything. So why you are refusing? Then he has to explain, I was in such a state. It was so free, freedom. No tension, no. Then the cook will ask, can you prove it? Did you experience it with your eye, or ear, or nose, or tongue, or body? But on what terms you experience at a light, at a sound? Then the billionaire will come into a situation. He can't prove to the cook. He can say, one day you, if you go there, it's a direct experience that you can't put into words. Even if he can experience the touch of the bed sheet, it is not a deep sleep. When you go to the deep sleep, no sounds, no light, no smell, no taste, no touch. So that is the maximum necessity for such a billionaire. So he has to prove his cook that you did disturb by this cake. So exactly the thing he says, the Pratisas had to say is, this is a possibility. This is a potential. It's an endowment in our mind. We never allow it to go there. We are always nourishing it with, fertilizing it with all the materialistic nourishment. So mind is always at the disturbed level, superficial level, it never recognized deep layers. When you go to the deep layer, you can say it's a kind of a pleasure, but you have no feeling, you have no perception. So that is in the Buddhist literature, it says, Sanya Vedaita Nirodhe. The mind come up to the bare minimum level, no perception, no feeling. So, if you are going to tell this in the pleasure-seeking world, with the pleasure principle, you find that you become unpopular nowhere because people are asking something tangible. Science is asking something repeatable. Science is asking something you can prove. So, this is not repeatable, not provable, but experienceable. That is why one can say, you can't prescribe it to the whole society. Never. But it's a challenge for one particular person. But it is also through a discipline, through a restrainment. And not only the restrainment, you must go prepared. The highest pleasure is where there is no feeling and perception. And we are on the way reducing. And the process is called Khayanupassana, Vayanupassana, Nirodhanupassana. We are wearing and tearing, wear and tear, and tapering off, disappearing side, and maximum disappearance is the feeling and perception. And when and where you are in a feeling and perception, of course, we are talking on the feeling, the Buddha asked, if someone is understand, his feelings are such, so feelings are arising by itself, and we feel it is due to unknown reason, or external person, or omnipotent, omnipresent person, or someone is angry with me, that is why the bad feelings are coming. But the Buddha says, if someone is asking, Vedana Chaham Bhikkhave King Nidana, King Samadhyaya, King Jataka, King Pabhava, this very, very sensation, sorry, feeling, is starting with what as the source, what is its origin, and the birth, and how it produced. You have to say the contact is the one proximate cause. When and where there is a contact, there is a feeling. So, contact decides, and that's a decisive factor, proximate cause. So, contact one has to be aware. Soon the contact comes into being, next is the feeling. So contact means coming superficial. The tip of the iceberg come out of the water. When and where it come out of the water, it become tangible, observable, measurable, everything. As far as it is not come into being, not measurable, not tangible. For example, in the sky, in the space, huge amount of light available. But nothing to reflect it. Therefore, it will be like dark. If there is any object come to the space, it appears like glory. Not due to that particular object. The sky is full of light, but nothing to reflect. Soon reflection happens, we understand that particular object is bright, but still the sky is in the darkness. Likewise, in a given thought moment, there are many things, many possibilities are there for the contacts to happen. Visual objects are coming and striking, sounds are coming and striking, smells, taste, touch, the mind also working. Contact is the one deciding which one to get connected. Of course, below the contact, chetana, volitions are working. Consciousness is working. Whenever the consciousness will come, only the contact happens. Whenever the volitions are decided, wish to select, then not the consciousness of contact going to happen. So, under the contact, the consciousness, your liking and disliking, or your motivations, mental preparations are working. Contact is the one deciding which to experience, which to feel. So therefore, if you do not know, it is then and there arising, the coincidence happens. If the contact is going to go to the eye, you become in a seer. If the contact is going to take place in the ear, you become a hearer. If the contact is going to happen in your nose, you become a person of smelling, and or tasting, or touching. Once it is decided, you have hardly any chance to change the channel. Because it is coming with the support of the consciousness, support of a mental motivation. So therefore, they are processed and decided. You are just subject to the situation that you have to see if the contact is going to show. Instead, in the same audience, another person may experience the same phenomena through his listening. Another person may experience the same phenomena with smell, with taste, with touch. And all the five are going to give interpretation on the same phenomena, what will be the outcome. One person will say, I saw it, I am telling with my eyewitness, it is that happened. Other person says, I don't know, I just listen. This is what it happened. Other person will say, the smell happened. Other person says, this is a taste happened. This is touch happened. So this is the way. So it's just to give a gross example. So therefore, unless otherwise you come to know when and where the contact happens, that is called appamada. The diligence, otherwise it's called your negligence. Soon the contact happens, you grab all the thing. Because you have already given the consent through the chetana and the consciousness has all validated it. And then now contact is going to happen. Soon the contact happens, it appears like yours, it appears like very important, very crucial. And very critical, so therefore you drag them into that particular thing, but you don't know by contacting sounds, you are foregoing another four. You are foregoing the light, smell, taste, touch. But you are no more as far as you are so engrossed with the sound that you listen. But it is what you like it, that is decided by your perception and your motivation. Mental preparation and seconded by the consciousness. So you are naturally you are attracted to it and ultimately you are either complaining it, telling it is bad or you are happy with its delighted. So the Buddha says unless otherwise you go into that particular point, you see how what a coincidence you to be a hearer at that time you would have will as well be a seer or smelling person or touching person or tasting person. And if you think you have any controlling power or governing power or you can implement your agenda. Sorry, no agenda. You can't implement your agenda. So, even if you are a very good practitioner, Even if you are successful in meditation, you will just understand its ungovernability. You will understand it's unchangeable. This is decided. So only you can do is fit into that situation and understand that is what you call suffering. It is beyond my control. It's ever-changing. It is torturing. It's burning. It is happening due to so much of causes. These causes are already pre-decided. And what can I do? You can grumble with it. You can be happy with it. But that is already happened. Whatever you do, you can't go beyond that level. So therefore, if you can develop the diligence, if you can develop the vigilance, as and when the touch happens, to be aware, not to grab hold it and entertain it, instead understand, now my touching is happening at the eye consciousness level. Now my touching is happening at the ear consciousness level, or eardrum, or happening in the nose, happening at the tongue, happening at the body. To aware that, how much mindfulness you have to develop in sitting meditation, only with one single object closed, every other, and that is how you are just doing experimental basis, develop the consciousness, mindfulness, and ultimately you let it happen in the walking meditation with little bit of other variables. In the day-to-day activities, they're full of variables, but still, your sharpness, diligence, the vigilance, the mindfulness, as and when the touch happens, possible, whether it is multitasking or single tasking, no. That is what the Buddha says. If you are developing archery or target shooting, you can start with the shooting to the fixed target. At the beginning, you find you can hold the gun and fire it because it will give us so much of a bursting. Ultimately, you will drop yourself. So, to hold the gun or pistol and the aim at a particular target, so much of bullets you have to waste. Later on you will understand just directing the bullet towards the target is a lot of trial and error. One day you will just hit the corner of the target and you get develop some kind of encouragement and determination and keep on fighting, only you can shoot to side. So much of wastage of bullets happen, but there is no other way. But imagine if you are to shoot a jumping animal. Still what happens is, bullet is reaching the target, whether it is moving or not. In the target shooting, the target is fixed, you are shooting. But when you are shooting with the jumping animal, target also moving, your bullet also moving, it's a coincidence. So, multitasking is shooting to a jumping animal. With sitting meditation, only do with the in-breath and out-breath is like a fixed target. So, you have to develop slowly, slowly, whatever it may be, when it is hitting the target, the coincidence happens whether its object is moving or not. So, therefore, at the beginning, when you are in the sitting meditation, when and where the disturbance arises, again and again to find out your primary object and verify it, reconfirm it, get the verification with the primary object and keep on doing. It's a very Montessori level exercise, but it's very important because our mind is always like a mad monkey jumping from object to object. No way. So therefore restraining into one thing is it's a huge restraint, huge discipline. And even then to get each and every bullet is reaching the bullseye, it's unimaginative for the undisciplined mind. But when you keep on practicing, one day you will see object is face to face in few seconds, few minutes. And then only you can penetrate into the object, that is like shooting the bullseye. And when you keep on practicing in the walking meditation, you are challenged to keep the track with one single object, but other things are coming and really giving you a challenge. Disturbing, but it is not a disturbance, that is a promotion, it's a kind of a higher training. And when you go back home, so much of things happen, even then If you are prepared, if you have already developed mindfulness, each and every moment, if you can trace where the contact is taking place, then you can understand no agenda. We can say we are expert on that particular subject and that particular skillfulness and kind of thing, but as far as the catching of this contact is concerned, we are unborn babies. We have to start from the, as a beginner's mind, try to catch as much as possible. You know what happens. If you are to catch when and where the seeing happens, when and where the hearing happens, when and where the smelling happens, when and where the taste happens, you can't entertain the object. You can be unmindful to entertain the object. You have to be bewildered to entertain the object. With the vigilance, with the sharpness, with the mindfulness, everything appears the same. That is the main cause. We are so expecting variety later. Whatever we grab hold, not we, contact or grab hold, we are going to justify it. And hold it, hug it, appreciate it, and then onwards, your mindfulness go, your diligence, vigilance, everything goes. So therefore, you have to do a huge amount of sacrification. One example given in our classroom was, if you are in a traditional film hall, and if you know when the light come and strike on the silver screen, the animation start. You can find the girl and the boy come and singing and dancing around the flower bush and kind of thing. And you know it is just the light coming and touching on the screen. And if you are to see backward, you can see the beam coming from the projector. And when it once strike on the object, the wall, there is no animation. You can see the beam is coming. All the colorations and all the movements are there. Till it come and strike on the wall, you can't see the panorama. You can't see the scenery. And it is coming from the one square inch kind of a window, and there still you can see it is often bright. Then you are looking backward, it's often bright. But you open a projector and see, only 50% of the time only light is there, 50% it is dark. You can't see the darkness. Not in the film hall, not in the small window of 1 square by 1 inch, it is happy like bright window that you can see the cam is there behind. It is rotating in such a way, 50% time, bright, 50% no light. But our mind, so happy with the brightness, so we miss the bus, we never see the darkness. You know, without the darkness, animation cannot take place. And behind the cam, between the cam and the lens, you have the celluloid. Behind the cam, the bright light, the spark is there. And from there only this is happening. So if you are interested in looking at the mechanism, how the projector is working while the film is running, can you entertain the film? If you are looking at and thinking about what is happening at the projector, it is the darkness and the lightness happening, and it is light coming and striking on the wall, and it is happening in such a speed, whenever the speed goes down, the thing is not animated, it is made jerks and kind of thing. That is why you are so ignorant not to look at the real mechanism, instead looking at the film. This is what we call the light. We are not happy to look back and see what is happening from where that light happened. What a kind of a magic, what a kind of a camouflage, what a kind of blindness, what a kind of bewilderment we should have to entertain a film. So when you are looking at the television, also the same. When you are looking at the Hollywood actors and actors are also the same. And ultimately we are also Hollywood. We are also acting in the same way. So, we are happy to see the film, but never to see the projector. So therefore, we are looking at the whole world through the eye. We don't know what is happening at the eye. We never can see it. Unless otherwise you are mindful and come back with. And there you can see, at least now I am a seer. I am a listener. I am a person touching. I am a person smelling, tasting. And happening in a such a fast speed. So much so, you feel like you can do all the five at a time. That is the beauty. We feel like while listening, we can see. While listening, seeing, we can touch. While listening, seeing, touching, we can taste. That is what we think. That ultimately Buddha says, if you know the thin slicing of time, you can see the order. Each and every piece is agglomerated, ultimately making a complete solid experience. Not only you are making a solid complete experience, you are making a solid complete experience. And then you know the justification of each other happen. So this is happen beyond contact. And behind the screen on the contact also, so much of thing happen just like in the projector. Now in this retreat, we don't have time to go backward. But the Buddha is explaining when and where such a feeling happen, feeling manifests, feeling reflects, beyond the contact level. Below the contact level, huge area is there, just like the behind the screen. That is also distractible. One by one, it is happening in a cause and effect relationship, reciprocal relationship. So, that particular relationship has no male-femaleness. That particular relationship has no young person, middle person, and elderly person. That particular experience has do not know the time. They do not understand space. They do not understand whether you are Buddhist or non-Buddhist. They are happening in there exactly the same way that is called humanity. But when and where you attracted to the film, only see what is happening in there, you find so much of fighting between male and female, Buddhist and non-Buddhist, and ordained and unordained, so much of sectarianism. So Buddha says, when you are going back, it appears like something personal, but more and more you go there, when you understand the humanity, at least you will be a person not appreciating sectarianism. Not appreciating conflicts. It is not if a conflict is within you. You are just projecting for the outside. Before that, it is happening inside because you do not see the source. If you are to see the source, you can see how the impromptu things are happening. Improvisation and impromptu adjustments. It is happening in such a speed, very difficult someone to comprehend unless otherwise with the help of the Buddha. Buddha says, therefore, it is a must. You must listen. Second thing is you must have a radical reflection. Dve me bhikkave paccaya sammāditya upādāya katame dve paramocha goso anchatta yonisopanishkāra. O monks, to have the clear view, two proximate factors are there according to my understanding. One thing is listening from the known person, the Buddha. The second thing is radical reflection, yonisopanishkāra. When that only, the reverse journey, against the pain journey happen. So, early parts, you don't see this much of a mechanism, or pit, or sap, or juice. But when you go further and further with the mindfulness, no end. You can develop up to the point where the omniscient knowledge. But the Buddha says to have your liberation, it is not necessary for you to be, you know, to you to develop. Omniscient knowledge, halfway you will understand the game. Now you will be ashamed. Am I to do the same acting? Am I to same satisfy the other people? Am I to get the fame, gain and all the kind of thing even though the 99%, 99 people are running? For instance, should I maintain my solitude? Should I maintain my peace of mind, my freedom? So, to wait against, it's a single, one particular person has to take the task. take the responsibility. So therefore the Buddha gives the complete authority for individuals. Not a second person involved, not a second person can authorize also. So that is why when the Westerners are writing on the mindfulness, it says it is not under authority of anyone. You can't say it is under the authority of Buddhists. No. Any human can do. So therefore what we have started is worthwhile. May be difficult to justify the early phases of the development. When you go further and further, you will understand that very investment made a real kind of a change, radical kind of a reflection. And one thing I can assure, once you start it, it will never stop. It's the biggest addiction in the world. Mindfulness is the biggest addiction in the world. Unless otherwise you become, go to the Nibbana, you can't stop it. Whatever, don't worry. You can't forget. Never. Whatever the weaknesses, whatever the thoughts, whatever disappointment happened, next again you see the full potential. So therefore, whether you go home or not, or be here, it is upward look, from bottom to upward look, from the top to bottom look. Whether it's a house or here, male or female, developed person or not, no, irrespective of that, mindfulness is working. It's the highest potential weapon in the world. So therefore, we have to arm with it. And once it is gained the power, it will take care. And you can put it on piloting and let it happen. So therefore, be happy about our initiative we have taken. Each and everyone is to their, according to their own effort. And with that effort, with your own error, trial and error, with your own, as you yourself as the teacher, you have to keep on practicing. More and more you have to practice, you will find more than the expected proportion of the population are now in mindfulness. Unless otherwise you develop mindfulness, you feel the world is full of a mess. It's a negligent, unmindful people. But whenever you develop mindfulness, you are bound to see, bound to meet more and more developed people. So therefore, mind your own business, be mindful. That is the, with that remark, I am going to sum up the today's talk as well as the series of talks. Thank you very much for listening.